wasn't like a scary hallucination. I just like saw like Jackson's mum come in and Jackson come in and guests come in and, you know, things that weren't actually happening. Like, I don't think the guests all came into my bedroom. No.
The lights go out, good nights are said. A dark, still silence sweeps across our towns and cities, leaving nothing but the rhythm of crickets, the hush of an evening breeze, and the whispers and lone footsteps of late-night wanderers. You're listening to All the Best, I'm Jess Hamilton, and today's episode is full of stories that come to life after most of us have fallen asleep. We have four stories for you that premiered at our listening event in Sydney this week, with a beautiful mix of poetry, documentary, and midnight anxieties as our sleepless contributors share with us what keeps them up at night. Our first story comes from contributor Sam Loy. Sam really should be sleeping, but instead his mind is stuck in Groundhog Day, replaying an awkward scene from his past over and over. This story has some bad language.
It's 1 a.m. and I can't sleep. I'm lying here thinking about this insignificant moment from my past, and I'm feeding it until it blows up out of all proportion. Let me take you back a ways. In 2006, or 2007, I can't remember, it's late, I was in Cusco, Peru, jumping off point for Machu Picchu, and home to many tourist-friendly late-night establishments that I frequented on many late nights. The confidence I needed to head out alone and make new friends each night was fueled by a self-image I had cultivated of me being awesome at everything. That and a petty regime of pisco sours and cheap cocaine, but an arrogant prick by any other name. By day, I needed something to do, and so I volunteered at Yanapai School, which was part daycare, part after-school homework club. It was run by a cheerful young guy named Yuri, who also ran a restaurant that raised funds for the school. One day, Yuri gathered all the kids together and told them it was their chance to get to know us volunteers a little better. Yuri told the kids where each of us was from: Germany, Israel, Australia, England, and then the kids could ask us a question. My Spanish was pretty basic, so when a young girl asked a question too quickly for me to catch, I waited for Yuri to translate.
She wants to know if you can crush children in your hands.
But of course, with a Peruvian accent. A jolt of adrenaline went through me. This was one of those moments that I could own, where I could take my droll Australian wit, translate it into my meagre Spanish, and become a legend in the eyes of these kids. Anything to prove my awesomeness. They were all sitting before me, doe-eyed and snotty-nosed, and in my mind I said,
"Sí. Uno en mi mano izquierda y uno en mi mano derecha."
I don't know if it means what I think it means, but I'm pretty sure it's that I could crush one in my left hand and one in my right. What a playful quip! The kids would have loved it, if only I said it out loud. But instead, I felt a drop in my stomach as my confidence deserted me. My mouth opened and
"Claro"
rolled out. I think it means clearly, as in evidently or precisely. A word probably a tad too adult for these kids. But what the fuck do I know? I don't speak Spanish. Leave me alone. Whatever the translation, the kids looked at me expressionless, almost as if they didn't even understand what I said. For a second, Yuri looked at me wide-eyed too, before he repeated my answer and gave a conciliatory chuckle, like I'm a simpleton who should be placated. He moved on to the next volunteer, and I was forgotten. What a doofus. And as I lie here at 1 a.m. trying to get to sleep, I chew on this single moment, and not for the first time either. I know that there's nothing about what happened that even remotely matters in the long run. but my brain can't let it go. Because it seems intent on making me recognise that the image I've cultivated of myself, effortlessly funny, disarmingly smart, strong, handsome and perfect, is nothing more than a fantasy version, modelled on reality, like a cheap Chinese knockoff. These insignificant moments are there to remind me that I'm not the superstar I think I am, walking around rocking everyone's world. They're there to remind me that I have to work towards being a better human by focusing on the ordinary man that I am. My daughter wakes in the next room, and since I've yet to fall asleep, I get up to settle her. She's half asleep, sitting up and crying, and as I pick her up, she grips onto me, snuggling into my neck, and drifts back to sleep. And suddenly, I'm not thinking about Cuzco anymore.
That story was called Es la Una de la Mañana and came from Sam Loy, with supervising producing by Jess Binneth and original music from Kent Sutherland. Special thanks to Ramon Martinez Mendoza. Sam has his own podcast, Human Ordinary, that we've featured on All the Best before. You should check it out. We'll put the links up on our website, allthebestradio.com. It's not always our anxieties that keep us up at night. Merrin and Andy are about to begin a new adventure. It's like nothing they've done before. And though it brings them great joy, it also brings them a lot of questions about the great unknown. Are you awake?
Yeah, I'm awake.
What are you thinking about?
Thinking about a name for a girl or a boy.
What's on the list?
Too many to mention. How about Pear Tree?
Apple Blossom.
Cherry Blossom. Cherry Pie.
Apple Fernandez.
Pie. Fernandez, that's like a tennis player. Well, that's from ABBA.
I was a woman before, just as much as now. I lived on the edge. I took risks, I danced, I laughed, I sang. I was free, unattached, independent. And though there were many things that scared me, I felt vulnerable in a different way. I was being a woman beyond my biology. And now, strange men at bus stops make me nervous, and I wouldn't say anything to shut them up, even if I wanted to, because I am carrying you. You. This new little being, so fragile and small and dependent. I was always so scared to have kids, or just didn't know if I should. I had nothing. No money. I'd made my own mistakes, and I thought it would be irresponsible to burden a child with a past. But this new love is so rich. And when I first found out about you, it felt so right. I will build you a castle out of stories. And a world that is rich and bold, and a place where you can dream beyond borders or logic or rules, beyond rich and poor, black and white, where you can play and grow and discover the true beauty of the human spirit. I will capture those dreams for you in earthenware jars and keep them safe until you're ready to emerge and fly. And they will be your currency, the dreamings. They will keep you safe when you are scared and give you strength when you are vulnerable. And when you feel lost, they will be a compass to bring you home, back to yourself. I will do my best and love you more than you will ever realize. Until one day, maybe you will have a child and realize what it is to love like this.
I guess I just hope that I can do my thing as an artist and be good for them as a family man.
That story was written and produced by Merrin Winchester with Andy Nichols. You're listening to All the Best, and today we're playing a collection of stories from our Sydney relaunch. They're all late-night tales about what keeps us up at night. Our next story comes from a 20-something-year-old couple living in a sunny share house in Thornbury, Melbourne. By day, Lucy is a florist, and Jackson is an artist and musician. They have a pretty normal relationship, but at night, things take a turn for the unusual.
So I have to sort of do this weird, like, breathing things. It's the only thing I can control at that point is, like, that. So
it's also, like, a sort of a muffled internal scream as well. It's like your mouth or your lips are, like, tight shut, but you're trying to get a sound out.
Yeah.
Get that kind of, that panicked feeling of maybe being underwater and trying to get up to the surface. I think it's sort of these slight shuddering movements. It's kind of sort of rigid, kind of shaking. those little murmurs, sort of a very quick breathing pattern. All of these signs that are, like, you know, alerting me to some form of terror is going on. And I'm usually half asleep when it's happening, but I usually manage to, you know, wake myself up and make sure that Lucy's okay, and usually wake her out of it and reassure her that it's all right.
When I dream about Jackson, he's really mean.
Hi, I'm Jackson.
Jackson.
Evil Jackson.
It's just really mean, my dreams.
We live together in our home in Thornbury, so we spend a lot of time sleeping next to one another.
It's all we do, pretty much.
Kind of, your sleep paralysis seems to come in cycles. You might have it a few nights in a week, and then you might not have it for maybe a month or two, and then it'll come back. And I don't know what it would be attributed to, but it's an interesting thing to experience as the person lying awake, but being conscious and seeing you in the midst of sleep paralysis and sort of trying to shake you or wake you out of it. It must be quite a terrifying thing for you to go through. So I always take it as my duty to comfort you and make sure you're okay.
My sleeping angel.
Let's have a go. Okay. First
you
attempt.
Lie in the pillow.
It's kind of like... It's kind of like that.
I just thought I was just like...
But yeah, there's also the breathing, so it's like... kind of like that.
Doesn't sound as sexy as I thought it did. I've always had irregular sleep patterns, probably because of the night terrors. but yeah, so I would often get sleep paralysis at night, which is where your body... is asleep but your mind's kind of awake. So I don't know if you're actually your eyes are open or you just remember what your room looks like, but you can see your bedroom and you can kind of hallucinate things happening. So like you might see like people coming into your room and it feels very real, but you can't move, like you're just lying there paralyzed. It feels dangerous because sometimes I'm sleeping on my stomach or like in a weird spot where like my face is smushed into the pillow, so if I need to breathe, I can't because I'm paralyzed.
Lucy. And I'm like, oh, I can't breathe. Just push me up.
But I can't say anything. So I think I want you to, like, be more, like, aggressive to wake me. But you're like...
Well, maybe I'll try that next time.
But it can be kind of interesting when I get sleep paralysis. Sometimes if I'm lying normally and I can breathe, then it can be quite fun. Like, I can feel like I'm flying through my ceiling and then through up through the sky, and then I feel like I can look down and see my house and the neighborhood and everything. And it's like an amazing euphoric feeling, kind of like getting high.
Can you see yourself when you're looking down?
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah, you really leave your body.
It's sort of like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah, like when people... I think when they have like death experiences, or like when they're in surgery or whatever, they can kind of float above their bodies and see what happens, and that sometimes happens. But then there's the opposite of that can happen, where I'm like sinking through the mattress and like it's terrifying, and like I can see the mattress springs like going up above me, and I can go through the floorboards and through the earth, and then I can hear like voices, and like they're kind of screaming at me, and like they're quite demonic. And that's terrifying. And it's kind of like, I don't know, I guess because I was like, had a Catholic upbringing, I'm gonna like attribute that to religious iconography, but like, you know, kind of feel like you're going down to hell or something.
Yeah,
and that's scary.
And it's interesting, I guess before we had methods of explaining this, or, you know, scientific rationale, you know, people hundreds of years ago might say they had a visitation from the devil or something like that as their way of explaining what happened to them.
We were staying at Jackson's mum's house last weekend, and I had a nap, and it happened then, and I could see the room really well. And I wasn't that familiar with the room, so I don't know if I would have been able to remember it, because I'm like really bad at remembering details, so I don't think I was remembering what it looked like. I think I was actually opening my eyes and seeing it, and then it wasn't like a scary hallucination. I just like saw like Jackson's mum come in, and Jackson come in, and then guests come in, and, you know, things that weren't actually happening. Like, I don't think the guests all came into my bedroom. No.
Let's go and check on the sleeping girl.
Yeah. No, that didn't happen in real life. Maybe it's a personality thing. I just will always have a funny sleep thing happening to me. I don't know why I used to have night terrors when I was a little kid. But Mum used to say, like, when I was a baby, like, she'd put me in the cot at night, I would, like, still be up, like, chatting and singing to myself at, like, 4 a.m. Like, I just never wanted to go to sleep at night. So, you know, it's like the good and... You gotta take the bad with the good and all that, you know.
Preferring the disease to the cure.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, what would the cure be? Like... Go to bed at 7:30 and wake up at 6 a.m.
Having a very normal sleep.
Boring sleep where you don't remember it and you don't have cool adventures. No way.
That story came from Britta Jorgensen and supervising producer Beck Fari. The night can be a time for switching off. But Melbourne-based poet Mugen Mugen often finds himself awake and wandering the dark streets when the city has gone to sleep. On these walks, Mugen draws inspiration for his writing, and beautiful dark poems emerge.
Yes, I see it as a dark, kind of lonely space, which is why I kind of make references to the night or living through darkness. Sure. My name is Mugen Mugen. I'm a Melbourneian poet. I write about unbelonging predominantly in many different areas, or areas that are not so visible. So the first poem I'm going to read is called The Thin Line of Loneliness. In solitude, I write about my soul, how troubled it has been. In this lonely space, my heart aches. My thoughts feel like a furnace, a lover leaving on my mother's abandoning hands. Even if I enter heaven through God's grace, I will make it burn. I became the sun who did not see marble underneath her feet, nor the flowing river that rushes out of her mouth when she laughs. Oh, how cold this house becomes when the sun shakes its hand. Everything here betrays itself. The ones that stay eventually leave. Love will take you if you allow it, but the way my saliva falls out of my mouth when I'm sleeping at night, it shows there are palms wanting to exit my torso. I wonder if I'll ever make it. But if I feel like I've been at home all day writing, or I've just been indoors all day, and it's late, I'll go out for a walk. So I don't know how to explain this, but I like to be out in maybe odd places or odd hours, and I'm reminded of the things that are always there. For example, the trees, the sky, the wind. I love walking, going out for walks like 2 a.m. in the morning. I love it because there's hardly seen anyone there. For me, the night brings out a different kind of world or different kind of experiences, or the moon, or brings out different versions of ourselves. And so to me, that when I'm feeling these things, the trees and the skies and everything else is always like, well, it brings me one comfort, and on the other level, it makes me uncomfortable because I feel like those, say, experiences of those people, you know, we're here and don't forget that we're here, basically. Able to be they are throughout the day. And for me, I do act differently at night. I feel more free at night, and I'm more comfortable talking to people at night than I am during the day. I don't know what that is, because naturally I'm an introvert, and small talk is something I struggle to do. But at night, I'm better at doing it, because I don't know what it is, but I feel more free, and I feel like it's just, I don't know, it's just easier for me to talk to someone at night. So the next poem is called Waking Up at Night. You wrecked soul, you foul being. You do not have to wake up in the middle of the night pleading your mistakes. Your heart is broken, I know. But what is the point of having one if the world isn't able to break it? We are here to get our hearts broken. Come to me, my love. Let us exchange stories. I will show you where grief lies in my body. My palm is like a sunflower blossom. It is open. There is enough space to place your rage. Collect the small pieces, put them in a jar, and I will teach you how to make jam out of your rot. When you go to bed tonight and darkness greets you, allow it to cover your body. It too has a calling. You are given everything you need to make it to the next morning. Well, I live in Fitzroy, which is like in a city. And so it's very busy, a lot of trams. I'm so used to it. I'm just realizing now how busy it is. There's a lot of traffic, a lot of buildings, a lot of people. You know, it's very, very, very busy area. And so throughout the day, there's just like a lot happening. And when I go out for a walk, like at 2 a.m., it's dead quiet. It's just, there's nothing, no one. Almost like it's haunted, actually, when there's no one here at night. It's like, it's just haunted. There's all these buildings, all these empty cars, and this silence. Moon Street. The men and women on this street are mute, each body too busy building a wall around their deviance. The women here speak in codes, much like the men were dragged between two mountains with two languages containing two worlds. Some of us die waiting, others build beds for people to lay and make love. When their spirits stop sauntering, the beds become a bathtub full with disappointment. Then they are taken away by sadness and the world moves on as it does. The men here are scared of each other, Unaware, each soul is trying to figure out what they are, how to stop their skin from decaying, what it means to be in exile. What is it that makes this street so dark? Why does it look like a hungry stomach, a mouth without teeth? Why does it taste like regret and strange memories? I am full with secrets I am ashamed of, nights I want to forget, alleyways that remember you longing to be seen, haunted memories that grow legs and follow you into your room and make a home under your bed.
That piece was recorded and produced by Beck Fahri and featured original poetry by Muggin Muggin. Beck Fahri and Muggin first met at last year's National Young Writers Festival, where they collaborated on another audio version of the poem Moon Street, which we played on All the Best last year. The four nocturnal stories you've heard today were taken from our listening event in Sydney, where we asked our contributors to tell us what keeps them up at night. We have more lined up for you next week when our storytellers will take us on more adventures after dark. Here's a little teaser from Josephine Smart's piece, Be Still Woodpecker.
The lake itself stretches out for miles, like an inland sea. It's surrounded by volcanoes, and pretty much everyone just gets around from town to town by boat. Earlier on this particular day, I tried and failed to hitch a ride out of town. But in classic Latin American style, no one rocked up, so I have no choice but to stay another night, because the next boat isn't due until the following morning. Thirsty, alone, and sick of small talk with fellow backpackers, I take myself to the one bar in town. There's one free seat, beside a guy who seems about my age. He looks up from his book. A gentle smile. I ask what he's reading. Tom Robbins, he says. Still Life with Woodpecker.
We'd love to say a special thank you to everyone who helped us pull off our Sydney relaunch event last week. To Audiocraft's Jess Binneth, Kate Montague and Amy Willing, our venue 107 Projects in Redfern, the All the Best editorial team, and in particular Beck Fahri for going above and beyond as usual, and our executive producer Selena Shannon, Andre Shannon for shooting our visuals, Tegan Nichols for cueing the night and mixing our nighttime soundtrack, which featured in today's episode, Chloe Gillespie, Pip Leeson, M. Smith and Geordie Donaldson for making the night happen as well. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Selena Shannon. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Bethany Atkinson-Quinton. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Tegan Nichols compiles our show. Beth Gibson is our SYN Production Manager. And I'm Jess Hamilton. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and also find our archives at allthebestradio.com. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.